in Bordeaux. We have just travelled together up the Medoc, across to Saint-Emilion, down to Sauterne, to the Grave, at several fascinating days of tasting one of the most interesting vintages I've tasted, because it is a vintage like no other that I have tasted before. And Jane is going to be writing up how many tasting notes?
Well, I'm now on day 10. It's Saturday morning, and I will be going back out this afternoon, but this is a nice, easy day because I got the morning off. I think by the end of another week, I'll be on about 800 or 900 wines to write up.
Well, I can tell you that the Jane Anson boot camp, we get up early and we get on the road, but we really have to concentrate on the wines, and they demand concentration this year. So, Jane, what are your impressions so far of 2022?
There has been a buzz kind of building about 2022, and we both know how good the Chateaus and the Négociants as well are at building that buzz, even in vintages which don't necessarily deserve it. I think, to be fair to all of them, this vintage does deserve people to be interested in it and to be looking at it. I don't think we have found it to be the vintage of the century, and I don't think we have found everything to be working, but when they work, it's great. And what I've really enjoyed about this vintage, as you say, is you have to really think about the wines. There's a lot to them. There's a lot of tannins, there's a lot of fruit. In most cases, there's a lot of acidity, like good acidity. I would say you kind of take everything that you thought about 2021, everything that we learnt on paper about 2021, and you turn it on its head for 2022. So where last year it was really about the Chateaus had to work to find concentration, because what the wines were naturally giving them was an awful lot of freshness, an awful lot of kind of floral aromatics. It was quite subtle. It wasn't always successful. As you know, I wasn't a huge fan of 2021, although there were some lovely wines. This year, it's kind of the opposite. The Chateaus had to wrestle with those big tannins. They had to find the acidity. They had to search for the subtleties and the nuance. Some of them did it brilliantly well. And so, yeah, I think it's been a vintage that you have to take your time to taste.
I have to say, my impression is that it is very much an individual vintage, and very much a vintage where you needed a really good winemaker who knew how to vinify. Were there any areas you thought there was broad advice on?
I think what we found everywhere in Omedoc, in Lalonde de Pomerol, in Saint-Emilion, across all different soil types, we have found deep colours. It's quite astonishing how much colour there is. So I think one of the things that the winemakers that we've spoken to, and just purely by looking at the shape of the wines, that idea of how do you control the tannins, how do you control the extraction, has been very important. So we've seen a number of Chateaus that have talked about bringing their temperature of fermentation down. So a lot of them have said that where they might have done it in the old days, and I expect last year to a certain extent, maybe 28 to 30 degrees centigrade during the fermentation, this year much more likely to be 26, sometimes even 24 degrees centigrade. And why they do that is because when you have a lot of tannins and a lot of high alcohols, you're trying to control that extraction. Because the higher the alcohol, as a rule of thumb, the quicker the colours will come out, the tannins will come out, everything that's in those skins will come out into the wine. So that's been very, very interesting, seeing how people have controlled their extraction.
Appellations. We started off in Northern Medoc, and on our first 2 days we tasted Lafitte, Mouton, Latour and Margaux. Any reflections?
I think I've been quite surprised by just how successful a lot of the big classified estates have been in really delivering something impressive which will last, but which has retained a sense of their own signature. And again, in this kind of a year where you have very, very high fruit and high alcohol, it can be so easy for everything to basically end up tasting the same, because it's just much harder to keep nuance when you have everything to excess. So I think they have done that to a good extent. Not everybody, but a lot of them have. I'm less sure of second wines. I found quite a few second wines that were a little bit samey because they're controlling all of this power. I think that we both found we went down to Soten yesterday. I think Soten really has had a hard time because it was very dry. You've got to remember this was not just a warm vintage, it was a very dry vintage. And what Soten needs is a little bit of wet, of humidity, of moisture to kickstart the noble rot. So they were waiting. They got great noble rot in the end, but not till mid-October. And by that point, there was a lot of sweetness. So I think that was probably a thing that everyone should be aware of. If you love your Sauternes luscious, this is a good vintage for it. If you love your Sauternes with a little bit higher acidity, it is more difficult to find that this year.
I couldn't agree more. But I must remind you of the one second wine we both absolutely loved and I thought was an absolute standout.
And I know what you're going to say.
Go on.
Petit Mouton.
Petit Mouton. It was a triumph this year. One of the comments that really struck me was from Jean-Philippe Dama at Haut-Brion, who said, "This is a vintage which has something for everybody." And I think he's right, because there are so many different styles. You cannot. There's nothing homogenous in the red wines that I've found. I mean, it really is estate by estate. Do you think that the last few vintages have helped them become battle-hardened for all these drier conditions? And do you think the experience that some of them have had in the New World, especially California, have brought a new perspective to Bordeaux?
I think, as we've been going around tasting, I've been kind of noting down which ones of the winemakers have worked in either Argentina or in California or in wherever that they might have had exposure to a number of hot, dry summers. And it's actually quite remarkable how many there are. So even down to Henri Lourton in Brancantinac, who, you know, makes such a... That was a big success, I thought, this year. Very, very luscious, but balanced and really, really good wine. And he, of course, makes wine in Baja California, so you know he's had the experience. Over at Mouton, you have Jean-Emmanuel Danjois, who was at Opus 1 in California. But you'll find, I believe we could continue with a couple, Gonzague Lorton at Dufort Vivens has been in Sonoma at Acaibo. You know, they own an estate there. There are a lot of them, and I've no doubt that it does help. Yesterday we had somebody who was specifically talking about, oh, I know, was trying vertical shoot positioning. So a way of protecting the berries by slightly changing the trellising during the growing season to make sure that there's more shade. And I've got to say, I can't remember who it was who said that, but somebody said it yesterday, and it's somebody who had been working in California. So it's very interesting how you're getting...
Fabian. At Smith Head Lafitte.
Oh, fantastic. That's exactly who it was. Thank you, Sarah. See, this is why it's so good to go around in a team. There's always somebody who can remember. So Fabian at Smith Head Lafitte, they, of course, got the Catillard vineyard in Napa. And already, they've only had that vineyard for a couple of years, and already that has influenced the way that he was looking at trellising in Bordeaux. So it's very, very interesting to have that kind of cross-pollination of ideas, which is, you know, definitely beneficial and kind of lovely to think that for so long Europe has been a little bit, you know, we're the old world. Of course, that in itself is not totally a misnomer, but still wonderful to see that this acknowledgement of the depth of knowledge over in the warmer climates and how they're now starting to help Bordeaux.
But I think it's interesting to note that unlike 2003, which I always remember a very respected director of a very well-known Poirier Chateau said, "Sarah, it is a Coca-Cola vintage for the Americans." This isn't a Californian vintage in any shape or form.
Except for the colours.
Except for the colours. Quite right, Jane, except for the colours. Because the great terroirs have managed, I think, to overcome, if you like, the vintage condition. So you still do have Bordeaux. It's a different expression of Bordeaux, but it's still Bordeaux. It's not California sweetness,
no,
the sweet berry that you get from California.
No, I totally agree with you. And I also think that California also has really changed as well, the expression of how they're working with heat in the vineyard. I think that definitely, having had vintages like 2003, where a lot of people really made the wrong choice, and when they look back, a number of producers say the problem they had in 2003 was they had no idea how to cope with that kind of weather, and a lot of them picked too late. they did what they would have done in any normal year, and they picked too late, and that's absolutely changed. But also in 2003, remember, we were much more influenced by that style of very big, high alcohols. So there was leaf stripping, even in, you know, these hot years like 2003, they were exposing the berries, so you had a lot more shriveling, and then you did find some kind of fig and dried fruit character, which we do still find this year in some cases. Now, we are not saying in any way that this is a close your eyes and buy vintage. It isn't. There are some that really haven't handled it well, but not just the winemakers, but the vines have got more used to it. So since 2009, and particularly since 2016, we have had a lot of hot, dry summers. And so the vines themselves have kind of got more used to coping and are more resilient. I'm sure that has helped as well. The other thing that was helpful this year was it was dry from the beginning. So if you have years like 2018, where it was very, very wet till the end of June, and then things kind of switched off, whereas this year it was hot from the beginning, so the vines got a little bit more used to it.
Yes, and I think that it's going to be very dangerous if people say, ah, oh, it's got a lot of tannins, it must be like 86. Oh, it's very hot, it's like 2003. It's like neither. We have moved on so much in our knowledge of, and I couldn't agree more, Jane, about how the vines appear to be adapting. It would be interesting to see the next couple of vintages, but I think there's great hope here that this could be a real transitional vintage where we see the vines want to survive. You know, all live things do. And so I'm fascinated to see the next couple of years, but I think it's a very hopeful vintage.
I think that's a really interesting point. I agree. I would say a few negative points, which is there were wildfires in Bordeaux this year that came close to certain parts of the vineyard. So the very, very southern tip of Graves and certain parts of the Médoc, and so far, I would say 98% of people got away with it, maybe 99%. There were, no matter what you hear generally, there were some estates who had to throw away certain lots because there were certain parts of smoke taint. They've done a very good job of keeping that off the general press, but we can tell our wine conversation listeners that did happen in some cases. But by and large, they were unaffected by it. But that is a big warning sign for the future, that Bordeaux is not protected just because it's next to the Atlantic Ocean from having these real changes of climate. The other thing that, we talked about this being an extremely dry vintage. It was, but remember, 2021 was an extremely wet vintage. So although the drought started quite early in 2022, there were reserves of water because of what happened last year. If in 2023 we have another extremely dry vintage, I would worry that it will be a different story and there will be a lot more shriveling, a lot more mortality of the vines, of the young vines, or even very, very old vines. So I think it is a hopeful vintage, but at the same time, we might be being lulled a bit into a false sense of security because we came very close to serious problems but managed to avoid them.
I agree, and I think the big question is, if it's drought, 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 drought for the future, then I think we are going to be looking at a very different pattern. In the car, it's extraordinary two women can spend so much time talking about clay and gravel, but we did. Your thoughts on the two terroirs, the two great, the clay, the role of clay, the role of gravel, because normally we go, hot, yeah, clay, water, Pomerol does well. Did you find there were any learnings from the terroir this year at all?
I think certainly before I began tasting, I was ready to dismiss gravel this year, that it would just have been too difficult. And we found a lot of gravel wines that actually have managed to keep quite surprising amounts of freshness, but also of kind of subtlety. As you know, and anyone who reads Inside Bordeaux book knows, one of the things that's so wonderful about gravel is as the grapes age, the Cabernet Sauvignon and gravel ages, it gets this incredible fragrance and freshness and kind of subtlety that you kind of don't expect when they're young. So I'm happy that I have seen this, particularly the gravels along that corridor in the Médoc, have survived really pretty well. I do think that limestone and clay limestone have done well, as you would expect, because they're much more able to keep freshness. So I would say if you are buying blindly, which I hope you don't do, but if you do, you're better to look at clay limestone soils, which means the Saint-Emilion Plateau, Fronsac, those kind of areas where there is much more natural austerity and natural freshness coming through. I think that we have found some pretty hard to taste and hard to drink wines that come from the sandier areas. You know, sand is always going to be difficult in this kind of a vintage because you just don't get the ability for it to hold the water, to retain it. And so there was some rain, for example, in June. If your soil is too drainy and too naturally reactive as sand is, then you're going to have some problems. So that is definitely a more difficult soil type. But I think gravel has done well, particularly in those, like I say, when you're near to a body of water, so you have freshness. Clay limestone has done as well as I thought, except we have found some clays that's so powerful that actually the tannins are pretty impassable. So that's complicated as well. So yeah, this is not an easy vintage.
No, and it is certainly a vintage where you're going to have to trust your critic or the merchant that you have the same taste. It is not a vintage to buy blindly. That is absolutely, because there were some wines which were just like tasting boulders. You could hardly get over the tannins to get to the fruit. So it's not one you can recommend uniformly at all. However, I agree with you, Jane. I think there were some stunning successes in it, but it is really a one which you're going to have to go by chateau. Irrigation.
Oh, yes. So this year, for the first time, there was irrigation allowed in certain communes. So Pomerol, most famously, Pessac-Léognan and Saint-Emilion all were allowed irrigation for the first time. Lalonde de Pomerol wasn't only because they applied too late. So it's a shame because in many ways Lalonde was probably needed it more than Pomerol, but they applied too late, so they weren't able to. And then what we've found as we've gone along that not everybody has used it, of course, but quite a few have. Even big names have done. So Aubryon used a little bit of irrigation, not very much, just on the vines between 3 and 7 years old. So the rules in France is 3 years and below, you're allowed anyway, because you're not actually making wine from those grapes. You're kind of setting the vines are growing when they're babies. So they're always allowed to be irrigated. And then after 3 years, you're not allowed in France as a rule, in an appellation like Bordeaux as a rule. Anyway, so this year, as long as you applied in advance, you could in certain appellations. But yeah, people like Aubryon chose to only do it for their younger vines, so 3 to 7 years. And other people chose not to at all. I found it quite widely used across Pomerol, because Pomerol, we know Pomerol has a lot of clay, but what we can forget about Pomerol is there's also a lot of gravel. So one of the things that makes Pomerol such an interesting vintage is you have a layer of clay, and then in certain estates you have a layer of gravel over the top, which is why when it's put with the Merlot grape, it gets so ripe and so fleshy and so gorgeous, because you get beautiful ripeness. But in a year like this, obviously, then you have to be careful. So there has been quite a bit of irrigation. The problem with irrigation is we've never done it before in Bordeaux, certainly not in those appellations. So there is nothing set up. So obviously in Napa, in Argentina, in Australia, there are these beautiful like drip irrigation systems in place, or it's under the ground, or all kinds of things. But here there's none of that. So what a lot of people ended up doing was tractors and buckets. And I'm not joking, and they weren't doing that until July to August. And anybody listening who actually does irrigation on a normal level will know that that's not effective, because you don't get enough water and you're not doing it for long enough. And so, again, like the forest fires, the idea that we had to irrigate, I think it's something which winemakers in Bordeaux will suddenly be thinking, oh God, that's another thing I need to invest in, and they'll be looking at ways to do that. Because if the weather continues as it's going, I think we can all agree it probably will do, then they're going to need to be looking at more long-term systems.
Well, I have to say, it was one of the most interesting discussions about pipes and rats we had with Jean-Philippe Dalmar and irrigation. Something we've never talked about at any other vintage in all the time I've been coming here. It's been absolutely fascinating week. When are your notes coming out, Jane?
They'll be coming out in early May, within the first 2 weeks of May. But I can't give a completely accurate date yet, but definitely within the first 2 weeks of May.
Well, I'm greatly looking forward to reading them. It's quite interesting. Jane and I have tasted together for years, but it's the first time we've actually travelled and tasted it en premier together. And 90% of the time, we've absolutely agreed and on the same page. And then we've had one or two wines which we're totally divided on. I'm not going to say which ones, but you would not imagine how you can have quite so many biff-ups in a car and arguments, but happy arguments and positive arguments.
Yeah, you're right, that's the fun of en primeur. You start to get into this ridiculous en primeur tunnel where it seems kind of normal to be bombing back and forth across different parts of Bordeaux, and then by the end of it you're just exhausted, ready for a glass of water and watching TV on the sofa.
Absolutely, and thank goodness for that. Well, Jane, good luck for next week. I'm returning back to lie on the sofa, and you've worn me out. It's a really interesting vintage. Wine lovers are going to have to be very discerning on this vintage. There'll be some fabulous wines, but there are a few stinkers too. Anyway, Jane, as always, great fun and fascinating to talk to you.
Thank you so much, Sarah. It's been great tasting with you.